Welcome to the Jumpstart Your Instructional Design Career podcast. This podcast is dedicated to helping new and aspiring instructional designers get the knowledge, skills, and confidence to stand out in the field and land their first corporate instructional design job. I'm your host, Jill Davidian, and think of this podcast as a way to put my over 20 years of corporate ID experience in your back pocket. I've helped over 1,200 new instructional designers successfully transition into the field, and I know what hiring managers are looking for. Whether you're looking for a career change and exploring if instructional design is right for you, or you know you want to become an ID and have no idea how to get started, you are in the right place. Join me each week for actionable guidance as we explore how to build your portfolio, transform your resume, and interview with confidence. Hello, hello. Welcome back to the podcast. So it is now the middle of June. Crazy. We're already deep into the summer for most of you. And I know a lot of you are busy working on your portfolios, creating your samples, working on this transition. And what I wanted to talk about today was the things that employers quickly shut your portfolio for, and they don't even get past like the first 10 seconds. The reason why this came up is because last week I did a masterclass workshop on Tuesday. And one of the offers that I made for people is that they could send me their portfolio if they were already working on it, if they've already completed a portfolio, if they were using it to apply for jobs or maybe getting ready to do that. And I would give them feedback. Every once in a while I do this. It's not something that I do all the time, but I've been a hiring manager in the past. I've looked at portfolios. Many times the employer doesn't even get past the first page. And I wanted to make sure that they did get past the first page for many of you that are working on that, because you work hard to do all these great things for your portfolio. And then if they don't even look at it, then what was that effort for? And what I wanted to do is give you the top five things that I noticed, because there's a lot of patterns. Things come up over and over, and I find myself giving people the same feedback over and over. And so I thought, why not just compile all of that and give it to you all so that you guys don't make those same mistakes? What I'm talking about today, you'll find, is not even really about creating an instructionally sound sample. It's not even really about instructional design at all. But why is it so important? Because your portfolio is, it's marketing. Your portfolio is like your store window, like your display window. So if you think about, if you run a store, if you're a store owner, and you've got, maybe you're on like a busy street where there's a lot of traffic as far as people driving by, people walking by, but that window in the front, that display is either going to catch somebody's eye or it's not. You may have the most amazing things inside your store, but nobody's going to see them if they don't come in, right? Same thing with an online presence, which is probably a much better example in 2026, is your website. If you are checking out a company because you want to do business with that company, you want to maybe purchase something from them, or you're looking for a particular service, and you go to their website to get more information, if their website is kind of poorly put together, or it just doesn't look super professional, you're probably going to leave and go somewhere else. You're not even going to give them the time of day. And again, they could have the best service, they could have the best customer service, the best product. I mean, they could do amazing things for you, but you're never going to know that because you're not going to get past that initial website look. Even though they're not web designers, you're not trying to hire them to create a website for you, but it's that first impression. First impressions really matter, whether it's a storefront, whether it is a website for a business offering a service or product, or if it's for your portfolio. You've got about 5 to 10 seconds to impress them before they keep moving. So the tips that I'm going to share are really how to get them to look further. It's not about how to create the most instructionally sound sample, to use the, you know, like all the best things to make it really solid instructional design, because even though that's very important, I feel like we talk about that a lot. What we don't talk about is that first impression and how we get them to even look at the things that we've been spending so much time learning and building. So here are my five tips. Number one, this is a thing that came up the most last week, is that I open the portfolio and I see education all over the place. Now, if you're trying to get a job in the education arena, in ed tech, even maybe higher ed, that's fine. But if you're trying to get a job in the corporate world or working for a company, developing training for their employees, working for even a nonprofit or working for government or anything like that, where it's for employees of some kind of organization, it cannot have education all over it. This came up so often, and people do not realize that this is turning off employers right away. They don't even want to look further. Why? Because you need to build a portfolio for the job you want, not the job you have. If you build a portfolio for what you've already been doing, you're going to get another job in what you've already been doing. And most of you are not trying to get a job in the same thing you've already been doing. You have to build it for the job you want, because an employer has to look at it and say, I could see him or her doing this for us. They're just looking at the types of things you have on your front page. Okay, I can see this person understands the corporate world, or at least maybe they don't know if you really understand, or they don't know if you've really done good things, but at least you're not turning them the opposite direction where they look at it and they're like, okay, this person looks like they have no clue what goes on in corporate because they made this so education focused. They're just going to say, this person is looking for a different job than what we're hiring for, so I'm just going to shut this down. I'm not even going to look further. They're not even looking for the job that I'm offering. Now, a lot of times the reason why people put education-related things in their portfolio is because typically a portfolio is supposed to be highlighting the things you've already done. If you think about a photographer's portfolio, they are highlighting their work. Sometimes they are going to take new pictures to put in their portfolio if they're a brand new photographer, in which case this kind of applies to the situation here with you being brand new to ID. But typically a portfolio is to showcase the things you've already done. So you think about, if you're coming from education, you're putting in things related to education because that's what you've already done. And you may think, oh, this actually does apply to adults technically, because maybe it was a PD, like professional development, that you did for other teachers, or maybe it's something you're in higher ed, so you're technically talking to college students, which are technically adults. So you're thinking that, okay, well, this is still for adults. I don't see a lot of people putting education-related things that are geared towards children. So I think we all get, or most of us get, that what we put in our portfolio needs to have an adult audience. I don't think that that is hard. But the mistake I see is that it's an adult audience, but it's still education. It immediately turns them off. Now, should it turn them off? Not necessarily, but this is psychology. Should a store window turn you off from walking into that store when maybe it's not the most interesting, but there's some really cool things inside and you'll just never know unless you walk in? The same thing with a business that maybe just isn't that great at web design, but they really have an amazing service to offer that has nothing to do with web design. Should that turn them off? I mean, those people are missing out on the good things that are inside, but it's just psychology of how our brains work. We immediately see something and our mind goes one of two directions. It's just the way we operate with everything that we do as humans. If you want to do something different, you have to create samples that are for the new career, which usually means from scratch. It usually means you have to come up with a fake company that you're creating this for. And I know coming up with topics is something that is often hard to do. Having to create something from scratch kind of feels a little bit weird. It also takes more time than pulling things that you've already done. But if you want to actually transition into this career, you're going to have to spend some time doing that. If you don't want to spend the time building new things, that's fine. But just know that the education-related things are just not going to get you anywhere. So there's really not a point to that unless you're planning on working in education. So that is the first thing, is it should not spell education all over the place. That does not mean that you're not talking about education anywhere. You can have that in your resume. You're not going to lie or anything like that. It's just that your resume is what you've done. Your portfolio is what you can do in the future for them. Your capabilities. Leave what you've already done to your resume and focus your portfolio on what you can do. The next thing that I see is that people have the wrong samples in their portfolio, meaning they don't have the type of work that employers want to see. I noticed this a lot last week, where I saw a lesson plan or some kind of planning document, but it's not a planning document that's used in corporate, or it was some kind of session that they led, but it was more like instructor-led training type of session. That's a corporate word, but that's not even the word they used in there, which if you are going to have materials from a live session, you want to at least call it an instructor-led session. There was nothing that was like virtual. There was nothing that was asynchronous online e-learning. It was all like in-person sessions that they had materials for, or some kind of participant workbook, or some different micro learning things that were more education related, or just the samples that they had in there were not things that people would use in corporate. So, you know, it's one thing to have the education theme all over things in terms of the topics you're using or in terms of just talking about education. It's another thing to have the type of sample be more something that would be used in education. So again, employers are looking at your portfolio to see, they want to say, oh, I could see him or her doing that work for us. So they want to see the types of documents that they use, the types of planning documents, the types of e-learning tools. They want to see you creating those types of things. If you have a storyboard or a design document on your portfolio done the way it's used in corporate, they can say, okay, I don't see that experience on her resume, but she knows how to do it because she has it on here. When you have a bunch of things on there that have nothing to do with what's done in corporate, they don't think you know what's done in corporate. And then they're going to hire you and they're going to have to do so much training and ramp up, and they don't want to have to do that. So one is just the topics that you choose, and two is the types of samples. So what are those? I've talked about them in other episodes, but just very quickly, you need to have an e-learning sample from Storyline, an e-learning sample from Rise, a design document, a storyboard, and a job aid. Those are the five minimum things. There's other things you can have on there, but if you don't have those five, it's going to be a very hard road. The third tip, or the third thing that I see that I want you to avoid, is I want you to be very careful about your visual design on your homepage. So this does not mean that you have to be a web designer and do all of this cool stuff. And honestly, with AI, you can create something very cool. And I would recommend everyone use AI for their website, because when you're not a web designer, so the point is not to showcase your web design skills, but the point is to get the employer past the first page. So it still needs to look very professional. And being able to do that in a quick manner where, you know, your web design skills are not the focus, who cares how well you could build the page from scratch? We just want to get past that psychological moment that people have where they just shut things down when they don't look a certain way. We want people to get past that so they can see the real work that you've put in. I know I've used Claude to design pages. I can create a whole design system with all of the different colors and fonts and things that I want to use, or you can have it do it for you. But what I've seen is that maybe you have like your projects displayed on the front page, and you have like an image or something that goes along with the project where they click on it to open the project. I've seen those images be stretched, like the image just doesn't look right. It's like a weird screenshot of the course, but it doesn't really look good on the page. Stretching images is a great way to throw somebody off and send them another direction because it just doesn't look professional. I've seen where some people dump walls of text on their homepage that have this whole big long paragraph about themselves that really should be on an about page and honestly probably shouldn't be that long at all on a portfolio. Sometimes things are not aligned very well, that type of thing. You've got maybe images that are blurry. So things like that you want to pay attention to. You do not have to be an expert web designer. That is not the point. It's just that the page is clean. You don't have blurry images. You don't have stretched images. Visually, there's spacing in between the different sections. It's not a bunch of like walls of text with no spacing. Everything is aligned and clean and laid out. All of that. The next one, which kind of goes along with this too, is that your links need to work. So I cannot tell you how many portfolios I've looked at. I looked at a few last week, and I've looked at some in the past where I go to click on a link and the link doesn't work. It just opens into a blank page. I get an error. And sometimes the link did work when you created it, but over time something happens. Sometimes people have uploaded things to Google Cloud And Google Cloud makes changes, and sometimes you have to go back in and fix something in order to get the link to work again. It breaks your links all the time. This happens to people in my program, Applied Instructional Design Academy. A lot of times, like alumni, after they finished, their links worked, we reviewed it, everything was great. And then a year later, they're like, crap, I just realized my links don't work. What happened? You should go back in periodically, like every couple weeks, at least once a month, and check to make sure your links are still working. It's a simple fix, but it's just something that a lot of people don't pay attention to. And how is anyone going to see your work if the link doesn't work? The next thing, and this gets a little further past the homepage and into when they first open your e-learning sample. So let's assume that you do have a storyline sample on your portfolio. You have a link on your homepage or on your portfolio page, and they open up your sample. What's going to make them want to keep looking at your sample? When you're new, there's a lot of things that are considered newbie mistakes. There are things that I can look at somebody's sample, especially with the software, and I can tell this person is brand new to the field. They really haven't used this tool very long. And you don't want to make those newbie mistakes, because even though they have nothing to do with the quality, they're the first impression, and they're going to tell the employer that you really don't know very much about the software. And you want to give them the impression that you really do know a lot about the software, even though it doesn't show on your resume that you have created 10 courses in Storyline. You want your portfolio to show that you really do have a solid command of what is done in corporate, how people use it, how to avoid the newbie mistakes. They don't have to go spend a lot of time correcting those things. So on the first page, when you open up an e-learning sample, it's usually the title of the course and it has a start button. Some kind of button to start the course. That's it. It's got some kind of an image, maybe a background, maybe some music, maybe not, the title of the course, and usually a button to get started. People usually put a button on the screen itself, like a start button, which is fine. But there's also built-in navigation that comes up in what's called the player. The player is kind of like the wrapper around your course. It has the menu. It has next and back buttons and maybe the volume button and closed caption buttons and some other buttons like on the bottom. So it's kind of like the wrapper. And the way that you change those settings or change what appears on the wrapper is not where you design the slide. And a lot of people don't even pay attention to the player. They just completely ignore it. So they create their nice, beautiful slide with their images and the title of the course and their start button, but they don't take the next and back buttons off of the player for that slide. That's very common. But you have to remove them from the first slide. So a newbie mistake, and it seems small, but honestly, it's just these small things add up and they just tell somebody that you're new to this. That's it. So it seems silly, but it's true, is that you should never have two paths of navigation forward to get off of the slide. So if you have a button in the middle of the screen, and this is not just true for the beginning slide, this is true for any slide. If you have buttons in the middle of the screen to do something that take you to another slide, like maybe it's a branching scenario or it's your start button or whatever, you should not have next and back buttons in the player also, because that's confusing and it can usually take people in different directions. They don't know what to click. They end up somewhere else because you have buttons on there that you didn't even intend to have on there that you forgot about. So then they go to some place that's not what you intended. You should have one way of navigation to get off of the slide. Now, if it's branching where there's more than one way to get off of the slide, then yes, you could have more than one button there. But if there really is only one way, like it's a title slide and you really just want them to go to the next slide, you should not have two buttons that take them there. You should also not have a back button on a title slide because there is no back. So that's something that I have seen on countless courses, which tells me people are not paying attention to the player and changing the player settings and adjusting that for their course. They're only paying attention to the slide itself. And that is a big newbie mistake. So there's five tips from my observations last week looking at portfolios. One, make sure it's not education focused. Save that for your resume if you are an educator. Two, make sure you have the right samples. You're not putting things that are not things used in corporate if you're trying to get into corporate. Three, you need to pay attention to the visual design of your page, the spacing and the alignment and the blurry images and the stretched images and the walls of text and all of that. Four, your links need to work. And if they work when you initially create it, don't assume they're going to keep working. And five, You want to pay attention to when you first open up your e-learning sample, especially for Storyline, that you only have one set of buttons that goes to the next slide. So custom start or player navigation, but not both. If you are interested in learning more about how to transition into instructional design, I hope that you will join us on Substack. I launched my Substack about a month ago, and I'm adding new articles to it every week that are different from what's on the podcast. So if you like to listen and then also read, that is a great place to join. It's called Jumpstart Your Instructional Design Career, and you can find the link in the show notes. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you next week. Thanks for tuning in to the Jumpstart Your Instructional Design Career podcast. I hope you've gained valuable insights that will help you on your instructional design journey. Did you have a moment of clarity? Maybe you have some additional questions. Let's discuss in my Facebook group, which can be found in the description below and in the show notes at learningstrategyanddesign.com/podcast. If you love the show and want to hear more, follow the podcast and give me a rating and review. Let me know if there's a specific topic you'd like me to cover or a guest you'd like me to have on the show. You can also check out more resources for breaking into instructional design on my website, learningstrategyanddesign.com. Stay tuned next week as I bring you more tips, tools, and strategies to jumpstart your instructional design career.